Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan, sitting in for Ann today. More than a decade ago, downtown Columbus was an area few people called home. Now the number of residents living downtown is outpacing demand. It's expected to hit more than 10,000 residents by 2018. But a recent boom of massive development projects inside the downtown core could soon transform the city's skyline. The latest project, rolled out last week by the Schottenstein Real Estate Group, would take up 23 acres and include three buildings at least 10 stories tall for apartments, condos, and a hotel, plus a district for shops, restaurants, and a grocery store. This hour, we're talking about downtown as a neighborhood, how far it has come and where it's heading. Joining me in the studio, the director of the Department of Development for the City of Columbus, Stephen Schoene. Steve, welcome.
Thank you.
Wow. That's all I can say when I go downtown and I see cranes everywhere.
It's busy, and it's not just downtown. It's downtown, and it's all the surrounding neighborhoods. Everybody talks about the Short North a lot, but we see a ton going on in the Near East Side. Parsons Avenue is seeing a rebirth. High Street South, and then Franklinton, everybody's talked about. Sure.
How does that start so that the city is at the core and spreads out to some of those older neighborhoods to rejuvenate them? Is that a city initiative? Is that develop or see opportunity? A little of both?
Yeah, I was going to say it's all of the above. And it's also catching the right wave of demographics. So the city 15 years ago started down the path of really reimagining downtown and reimagining how we make downtown attractive. And that set the stage so that we were able to catch the wave, if you will, of demographic changes. And I think we're seeing that come to fruition, and you're seeing a lot of great developments go up right now.
Is Columbus unique in that?
A little unique, but not entirely. I think one of the things as I look around the country, I think we're kind of in that Goldilocks spot where it's not too warm, it's not too cold, it's just right. And you look at some markets, the one everybody talks about, the two that people talk about a lot are places like San Francisco and Seattle, where the market's so incredibly hot and they're seeing real disruption to the way the city operates and the way that people live. And then you see other places that are still shrinking, and we're in a market that's growing and it's growing well, but for the city, it feels like we're growing in a way that we can manage and still maintain the character of our city.
One of the newest proposals called Grand Central. Can you explain where this is? I know it's 23 acres, and I'm thinking, where do we have 23 acres? And I even know it's around the Arena District area.
Yeah, it's a tough site. It's so as you're going, if you're coming into downtown from 315 and getting off onto Goodale and, you know, zipping down to try and get to Neal Avenue and turn right to head into Huntington Park and the music venue. That strip of land along there that's all treed, that's part of it. And then if you look at it aerially, there's a triangle that sits between that sits kind of behind Huntington Park.
To the north we're talking here.
To the north and west. Sorry for those
there's
on radio.
Still,
you can't see my hand motions.
Right.
There's a triangle there. It's essentially surrounded by railroad tracks.
And why do they think that this is an optimum place to build?
We've only had a couple meetings with them, so I don't really know that much about their plans. Part of the reason that it hasn't been built on to this point is it's a really difficult site to access.
You're talking roads.
Yes.
And is that where the city comes in on this?
We don't know yet because we've only had a couple meetings with them.
What are other major developments that are going on downtown?
There are a lot. We are right now in the process of working with Columbus Downtown Development Corporation to select a developer for the Scioto Peninsula. A lot of folks think of that as being Franklinton. It's the land back behind COSI. So right now at COSI, Columbus Downtown Development Corporation is in the process of building a 680-spot underground parking garage. We're going to put a park on top of that. And then behind that, we're going to select a private developer to put in a development that we think will have, you know, 1,700 residential units, a significant, I think on the order of 750,000, 800,000 square feet of office space, and a variety of retail and cultural amenities in there. It's a great site. That's one of them. Nationwide Realty Investors continues to build out the arena district. And then we're also working on a development at the North Market.
And do you expect all of these things to get the attention from residents, customers, that they will all be successful?
Yes.
Simple answer, yes.
Short answer, yes.
We're talking downtown Columbus development and the rise in residents living downtown. If you have a question or comment or you live downtown, give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email allsides at WOSU.org. For people who haven't lived here for many years, how would you describe downtown Columbus 20, 30 years ago?
So I first came to Columbus in 92 or 93, but spent a summer here, went away for a few years and came back in 97. And at that point, you know, Columbus downtown was about state government, law firms, and a mall.
And banks.
Yeah, and banks. And a mall. And today, it's about having great places where people congregate, which was just a completely foreign concept.
I remember when people tore down City Center, the city decided this was the way to go.
Yeah.
A huge uproar in the beginning. Like, how could we – who wants a big piece of land in the middle of the city and you're tearing this down and look what happened?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to have 15 entertaining minutes, ask former Mayor Coleman what that experience was like, and he'll give you
I'm sure.
15 good minutes on that. And it was very painful. And it was something that people looked at it and said – how can you replace this physical structure with green space and create more value? It's counterintuitive, but in fact, it works. If you look at what's happened around where the mall was and you look at everything that's gone up around it, sometimes tearing down a building and creating green space and a place for people to gather adds more value than the building.
There are many new buildings going up, but there's also renovation of older buildings like the Levesque. And as a person who really still loves these old buildings, and I've seen condos and apartments going in some of these older banks that closed, mm-hmm. and they're gorgeous facilities. Is the city pushing some of that as well?
Yeah. One of the projects that I'm really excited about is at the far end of Nationwide Boulevard, where Nationwide Boulevard dead ends into the Olentangy River. There's the original municipal light plant.
Yes.
We sold that to a developer by the name of Brad DeHays a couple years ago, and he's in the process of gutting that to some extent. It's actually very interesting. He's leaving a lot of the steel beams and some of the old coal hoppers to give it that industrial feel. But he's taking these buildings. There's three of them. One was built in the late 1800s, one was built in the early 1900s, and one was built in the 1950s, and converting them into great space that I think is going to be some of the most attractive in the city. And that's really using an old asset. One of the biggest challenges for Columbus when you compare it to other cities is we don't have a lot of buildings like that that are in a condition where they can still be salvaged. We've lost some great buildings because they got beyond the point where they could be salvaged.
Which is sad, but mm-hmm. the ones that are still here, it's good to know that people are at least looking at them a second time,
yep.
seeing how we can improve on those. One of the pieces that you say that is missing is more retail downtown, mm-hmm. and I agree. Tons of new restaurants, not all are viable. Some have closed, but I don't see much, you know, retail, and there are people living downtown.
You know, retail is a lagging – first of all, it's the last piece of an environment to come in typically.
Really?
Because retailers the old adage is that retail chases rooftops. Retail, really what it chases is it chases the number of wallets and the amount of money in those wallets. And so there will be more retail coming in. I think hitting that 10,000 resident mark will be kind of a magic number for a lot of retailers. But with – everything retail right now, so much is up in the air because the nature of retail is changing.
True.
That, you know, I don't need to have a retailer right next to me to be able to get something on my doorstep by tomorrow. There are a variety. I don't need to have a retailer right next to me to get something within 2 hours. So the nature of what retail is going to be is so in flux that it's hard to predict.
We're going to take a call now. This is Harold from Columbus. Harold, you're on your ear, and you're a question or comment, please.
Well, first of all, congratulations on the work that's being done down there. I think it's wonderful. Secondly, I'm wondering, because I'm sensing that this is geared towards a demographic that is more educated, more professionally inclined, under 40, and I'm wondering what the plans are for working class or lower middle income or lower income housing might be in that redevelopment.
Good question, Harold. And really, that a lot of people are talking about that, Steve, especially as you push out to those Near East Side, Franklinton areas where typically some lower income folks have called home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it is one of the it is one of the great challenges, I think. And Harold, thanks for the question. That was a fantastic question. There are two ways to deal with housing affordability. One is we do have a issue where the city is going to grow. We're going to add people. And when you add people, that adds demand. And if supply doesn't go up, prices are going to go up. So at some level, building any housing helps relieve the pressure on prices, particularly in those very attractive neighborhoods. Because if you don't build more, the people with money are just going to build up the price on what's there. We have had success in places like Wyland Park in terms of preserving some affordable housing within the neighborhood and preserving the character of the place so that everyone still feels like it's home while still allowing new residents to come in and improving the housing stock and improving the quality of the neighborhood. We're trying to learn the lessons from that and see how do we replicate that in downtown, in Franklinton, along Parsons Avenue, on the Near East Side, all those places that we talked about. Some of that is a combination of some of that is using traditional affordable housing tools like tax credit housing, working with groups like Homeport to build housing that is locked in legally to be affordable. We're looking for other ways to do that. We're going through the process of studying what's being done around the country to find other ways to do it because we know we can't afford to buy down rent for everybody who needs us to buy down rent. We've got to find other ways to do it.
So right now, who's living downtown?
Well, you'll have one of your guests later, Mark Conti from the Downtown Special Improvement Districts, who can give you great statistics on that. I looked at it a little bit. It is it's an older demographic, actually, than you think it is. But it tends to be either empty nesters or millennials, folks without kids.
Which makes sense.
Which makes sense,
yeah.
Because we're still an environment. We're still a city where that has a much more traditional attitude towards where you raise children. But there are some great schools in downtown, and you're beginning to see more people living downtown with kids. It's really in flux, and it's hard to say.
Very interesting. Thank you so much, Steve, for joining us. I'd like to thank Steve for coming on the show. He's the director of the Department of Development for the City of Columbus. It looks like we're going to be seeing more cranes downtown, and we will keep our eyes peeled.
Great. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. We're going to take a quick break and continue the conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan, sitting in for Ann today. Over a decade ago, downtown Columbus was a barren commercial district where people worked during the day and drove home to the suburbs at night. Fewer than 5,000 people lived in the city center. Now Columbus is seeing a surge in downtown dwellers. The number is expected to double by 2018, and there aren't enough apartments to go around. A recent boom of large-scale development projects could transform the downtown skyline. The latest massive project rolled out last week by the Schottenstein Real Estate Group and it would take up 23 acres and include three buildings at least 10 stories tall for apartments, condos, and a hotel, plus a district for shops, restaurants, and a grocery store. We're talking about development in downtown Columbus this hour. With me now, the Columbus Dispatch reporter Jim Weicker, housing reporter, joining me in the studio as well, assistant professor in the Knowlton School of Architecture at The Ohio State University, Matisse and Massacres, and Director of Research at Capital Crossroads and Discovery Special Improvements District, Mark Conti. Thank you all for joining me. And I'm going to go to you, Jim, just a little bit, because you have been reporting on this new big project that the Schottenstein Company is proposing. Is this one of the biggest ones after Grandview Yard that we will be looking at?
Well, it's huge, that's for sure. Grandview Yard, of course, is massive. The Arena District right next to it, of course, is huge. Those two are taken together, certainly would compare with this. But this is different in a couple ways. As Steve mentioned earlier, access is going to be an issue moving forward on this. But if that can be resolved, the site in a lot of ways has much to recommend it. It's right by the Arena District. It has huge highway access. But if you take the project as a whole, it includes pretty much everything you can imagine, which is one thing that makes it very different than other projects that we've seen downtown. As you mentioned, it has high-rise residential, both condo and apartments. It has a high-rise hotel. It has a extended stay hotel. It has a conference center. And I think most interesting, it has sort of a Main Street style corridor of shops, restaurants, sort of a mini Easton, if you will, topped by more apartments. To me, that's the most unusual part about the project. You know, the hotels, the residential, what we've seen downtown and what Steve commented on, clearly there's a demand for that. I think that's the easy part of the equation. The Main Street retail component, I think, is going to be the most challenging part, and that's assuming, of course, the access itself can be addressed.
Right. Steve mentioned that roads and getting in and out would be something that needs to be addressed, but it's something to look forward to. And, Mark, you recently put out the State of Downtown Columbus report. I'd like to know some of the key findings, because I drive around the city and I look at everything going up and I think, who is living here? Not just who, but do we need all this? Are there enough people to fill these? And apparently there are.
Yeah, the short answer is yes, everything is filling up. You know, one of the issues is our region continues to grow. The Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission expects us to add a million more people by the year 2050. Those people are going to need to live somewhere. And a lot of them are choosing downtown in the urban neighborhoods.
And what are they coming to Columbus to do?
We see an increase in jobs. That's not really my specialty is exactly what they're doing, but we're definitely seeing an increase in financial services, insurance, real estate, and probably more tech jobs.
You also indicated that some of the retail and restaurants that are opening are closing too. So not everything has seemed to be working.
Right. And as Steve said, retail follows rooftops. And so we're expected to hit the 10,000 population threshold in early 2019. I think we'll see a little bit more retail happen after that. One of the problems with downtown retail, though, is that we don't have space to put people. If you go up and down High Street, there's a lot of vacant lots and a lot of stuff under construction. Right now, there's 75,000 square feet of retail and restaurant space under construction just on High Street. I think once that's completed, you'll see a huge influx of retailers.
Matisse, is this something that we are seeing in other cities across the nation? And I know Steve directed this a little bit, saying that, you know, we're not unique, but we certainly are one of the cities that is showing strength.
Yeah, I think these it seems to me that as a relative newcomer to the city, that Columbus is at a bit of a pivot moment in its history, right, where development projects are coming out week after week, whereas maybe 10 years ago, something like the Yard could be discussed in depth and at length. Now we're seeing projects of the scale of something like Grand Central coming up, I think, more frequently, which requires a shift in thinking. I think that type of development boom, if you will, has other cities have experienced it as well. I'm thinking about Portland. I'm thinking about Boston. Cities have of a similar scale in terms of population have seen, I think, development periods of rapid development as well.
What do you think is the mindset now, though, of folks as they look at these downtown living spaces? 10, 20, 30 years ago, nobody really thought about it. It wasn't considered cool. It wasn't attractive. What's changed in the mind of these, you know, residents?
I think there, and this has been documented, there is a desire for a more urban living among a certain category of the population. I think the mindset of the broader community ought to be perhaps what is the community, how is the community at large benefiting from the sort of tax abatements and other incentives that the city is using to enhance these developments or enable them? What is the community at large getting from these developments, right, in terms of enhanced connectivity, enhanced walkability, not just within a site, but also between the Arena District and the proposed Grand Central? So I think there are two mindsets that are changing. I think on the one hand, you see young folks wanting to live in those areas, maybe retired folks wanting to live in those more walkable areas. I think what I've seen over the last year or so, there's a shift in the mindset of the community at large being more critical about what are these types of developments delivering for the city at large and not just for the potential residents of individual high-end developments.
And Mark, I mean, Matthijs just talked about high-end. Most of these places are high-end, aren't they? I mean, they're expensive.
Yeah, they are. Certainly, we're seeing rents go up higher than we ever have before, especially within downtown. I think the big thing, though, is supply and demand. We have a high demand, and we haven't had the supply keep up with that. And so right now, we have a 96% occupancy of apartments downtown. And as long as the occupancy stays that high and we're not seeing enough new product come online, the rents will keep going up.
Oh, we just got an email about affordability. We also have someone on the line that's talking about where the lower income folks are going to go. What about the affordability factor? Will that ever be in play in downtown, or is it simply going to be out of the question that if you are moderate, medium income, this isn't going to be a place for you?
That's a great question, and certainly something as a community we need to have a dialogue with the city about. Right now, 15% of all the downtown units are subsidized, so they are subsidized low-income units. That percentage, of course, will shrink if we don't see any additional projects get built. Over the last 15 years, we've seen two projects, or really three, Hawthorne Grove, Commons at Grant, and Commons at Buckingham, and so there's a chance we could see more of those get built.
Yeah, I mean, I have millennial kids. I really don't know if any of them could afford to live here. And they're college graduates and they have decent jobs. I'm like, so who are these kids that are living here? Because there are a lot of millennials. Because some of these are $1,500 to $2,000 a month rent. You're all smiling and laughing. You're like, well, I'm not sure, but somebody is. I mean, I don't know.
Well, there are a lot of millennials, to be sure, and studies have shown that they spend a disproportionate amount of their income on rent, more than we might have. Not that we were so frugal, but there's no question they don't have the savings, which is one reason they're not buying. And I also, Gail, wanted to put some of what we see downtown into a broader context. What you see downtown is driven by apartments, unlike the last building boom downtown in the 70s and 80s, which was driven by offices. You know, almost all the offices, high-rise offices you see downtown were built in the 70s and 80s. Now it's residential that's driving it. But it's not just downtown. In fact, if you look at the largest apartment buildings going on in central Ohio, they aren't downtown. They're in Hilliard, they're in Dublin, they're in New Albany. This is a widespread central Ohio phenomenon, not strictly downtown.
I did forget about that big Dublin project. There are a lot of apartments up there.
There are. And you know, there's two big towers, for example, proposed downtown on the North Market site and then Millennial Tower. If you take the total number of apartments in those two towers, it's about 340. The apartment complex announced on the Anderson site recently has almost twice that many. And I love the downtown development, but I think it's important to keep in a broader perspective. This is what we see downtown is really a reflection of a huge, huge boom in apartment construction in central Ohio and throughout the country.
We're discussing the downtown Columbus building boom, especially high-rise residential housing. If you have a question or comment, call us at 614-292-8513 or email allsides@wosu.org. From 2003 to 2007, most of the residential development in downtown were condos. Condos were built. There was Brewer's Yard, Liberty Place. It was, again, the Brewery District, the Arena District. How much of that suffered then from the recession in 2008? And if so, how did we get back into the swing of things? Because apparently that's not stopping anybody now. Mark?
Well, that was the biggest issue, was the national market crash in 2008. And so there were a lot of people who still wanted to move downtown. They just couldn't get a mortgage, or they couldn't sell their suburban home in order to move downtown, which was the case for empty nesters. Then you had the case of people just getting out of college that wanted to buy. But it's a lot of the problem was the first in, first out or the last in, first out for their job. They were worried about getting laid off even for a few years after the recession. So they were more apt to go rent than to buy.
And then that impacted everything downtown. Did it actually come to a halt? Any kind of building?
Yeah, we only had probably one developer who was doing active projects for about a year or two until the other developers could get back up and running. The other thing we saw was a severe slowdown in the production home building that we used to see out in the suburbs on the Outer Belt and outside the Outer Belt. That's starting to pick up again, but it's still not at the rate that it was in the 2000s.
We're going to take a call. This is Sam from Clintonville. Sam, your comment or question, please. You're on the air.
I think that all buildings, including the new ones that are about to be constructed, be required to have green roofs. It lowers greenhouse gases, provides potential habitat for bees because you could have floral plants there. It improves drainage and even prolongs the lifetime of the roof. I'm thinking of Hallett Hall, which incidentally could be an interesting program for the future, you know, all the benefits derived from green roofs.
Well, I appreciate that comment, Sam, and I'm going to ask Matthijs about that. Is this something that you're seeing other places?
I think pollinator habitat is wonderful. I think green roofs are in many cases, can be an amenity in a variety of ways, both from an ecological point of view, from a community point of view. I think it's an example of the type of amenity, frankly, that the community should have a conversation about. Is this something that, given the amount of tax incentives and other development incentives that the city is giving out, which essentially provides leverage for the city to ask developers to do additional, to provide additional benefits to the community, is something that the community in Columbus wants to prioritize green roofs and asking developers to provide that in addition to the sort of basic development that they're proposing, because there are trade-offs there. If you're going to ask a developer as a sort of linkage deal associated with the development to, say, provide a green roof, maybe that requires resources that developer can't spend on affordability, for example, to provide a certain percentage of affordable housing. Or the developer might be pushed to, say, connect to existing bike infrastructure. Those types of community benefits can be asked for by the city, especially in situations, which is most of the time, where the city is providing some sort of tax break or other incentive.
Or roads and all those other things. So Mark's shaking his head, yeah.
Those incentives create a negotiation essentially between the city and the developer about the type of benefits that are going to be extracted or asked for. But then I believe that the community at large should have a conversation about individual properties, neighborhoods, what are the most necessary amenities here that the city ought to be asking for from these developers? And that might be green roofs in some cases. I would hesitate to make a blanket statement that green roofs are a great idea everywhere around the city, but in certain locations they might very well be where stormwater runoff is a problem, for example.
Well, when you look at architecture and you look at downtown, how do you make sure that all of the new developments stay viable? Because what I noticed living here was that when the Brewery District was first, then the Arena District came on, and that was really hot and popular, restaurants, living, and then the Brewery District kind of died off. Like, why couldn't both of them? I know they're at separate ends of the downtown. How do we keep them connected? How do we keep them all viable that we're building?
Yeah, I would argue that is what city planning is about. So actually having spatially explicit at the neighborhood scale, at the lot scale, visions for how these projects might cohere with one another. If you look at the Grand Central project, right next door is the White Castle development, which is currently being discussed as significant additional residential and office space as well. As you mentioned before, we have the Arena District on one side, the Yard on the other side. Across the street, there's 600 Goodale Kaufman development property that's built already. already. So how do those cohere? From a market point of view, right? Does one offer high end, and are we going to ask another developer to primarily develop affordable, or is there going to be a sharing of sort of some of those additional requirements that enable the creation of a more integrative and coherent urban structure rather than just making decisions on the go as one developer says, I want to do this, and the next developer next door says, I want to do this. If you evaluate those proposals in isolation from one another, you're not going to have a sort of cohesive urban form, and that runs the risk of having very rapid fluctuations in price, affordability, and availability.
Mark, how much is the city involved in this sort of thing?
Not too much. And on this brewery district question in particular, the demand for living in the brewery district never really changed. What we all saw and witnessed were the fickle taste of young bargoers. And I don't think there's any government policy that's going to be able to regulate that. But I think the key there is going to be
– So really, you didn't see a change in people who were living in the brewery district.
Right, because a lot of those bars and restaurants were closing even as Brewer's Yard, which was like a 300-unit apartment complex, was coming online. I think the key is going to be just more density. The more people we have living in these different neighborhoods, the more viable their commercial districts are going to be.
I'm going to take another question here from Scott in Columbus. Scott, you're on the air. Your question or comment, please.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate all the discussion of how our development can include affordability. It seems like Columbus and other cities our size have an opportunity to maybe miss some of the problems that we see in New York City or San Francisco. I am interested in also hearing about how development affects our homeless community here in Columbus. It seems that as the city becomes more vibrant, that is potentially an opportunity for more homeless people to come to the city to find support, whether that's on the street corner or somewhere else. But it also seems that some of this development is happening in areas that perhaps traditionally homeless communities may have found a place to sleep. And I'm curious if there are ways that we can support those communities as we have this great development in Columbus as well. Thank you.
Scott, thank you for that question. And I'm going to put it out to the panel. Anybody want to address it? Matthijs?
Sure. Speaking of Mark's point about 15% of the downtown housing being subsidized in some way, right, or affordable.
Yeah.
So a city of comparable size that I know pretty well is Amsterdam, where that percentage is closer to 65%.
Wow. So
that's a significant difference. I understand different country, different policy context. But I think in terms of the overall size, having that significant of a percentage of housing being affordable in some way has very clear implications for the homeless community as well. There's less homelessness. And given the greater income diversity in most neighborhoods in Amsterdam when compared to the sort of more divided income level and here, you see that there's less antagonism towards homeless support facilities, for example, because people are simply used to living within a mix of income levels. So I think there's an argument to be made for asking for more ability, and the city, when it chooses to use a tax incentive, having a serious conversation with a developer about affordability to up that percentage from 15% to perhaps not 65, but
yeah, that'd be quite a jump. But to start.
And I think a corollary would and perhaps ought to be to then talk about the homeless community in those conversations as well.
And we're for the two special improvement districts in downtown, they're funded by property owners. And we're also focused on an aspect of the homeless population that we've seen. And we've seen a big influx in the last couple of years. We have two homeless outreach workers on our staff that go out and meet with individuals to see if we can get them connected to services and get them off the street. A lot of times they might have benefits due them, but they don't have their ID. We help with that. We help them navigate the shelter process. But it's clear that we're dealing with it on the front lines. We need a stronger community answer for this.
You're listening to All Sides. If you're a downtown dweller, give us a call and tell us what attracted you there and why you're staying or not. And if you're thinking about downtown living, give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be back. Thank you. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. I'm Gail Hogan, sitting in for Ann today. We're talking about the recent boom in downtown residential development and what will make it viable going forward. Still with us, housing writer for the Columbus Dispatch, Jim Weicker. Jim, thank you for being here. Assistant professor in the Knowlton School of Agriculture, or architecture. No, I just turned you into a farmer, Matthias. I'm
That's
sorry.
That's all right. Farming's important.
Architecture at Ohio State University, Matthias Van Maskers, and director of research at Capital Crossroads and Discovery Special Improvement Districts, Mark Conti. Thank you all still for being here. Mark, let me talk to you about new buildings going up. That means a change in parking and transportation. How do we address that? What is being done to address that?
Well, right now in the core of downtown, we're seeing a parking crunch during the daytime. And one of the issues is brokers have been calling us saying, hey, I have a deal. I'm working on a deal for a new office tenant. Can you find me 50 spaces? And our answer now is no, we can't. And since we started getting those calls about 4 years ago, we've lost an additional 2,000 spaces to new development. So on the one hand, we're getting great new buildings and new residents, but we're losing surface parking. And that's starting to hurt the office market. The Capital Crossroads property owners are proposing a program in conjunction with CODA that the owners would pay for bus passes for all the people who work within the district. And by that, we're hoping to shift about 5 to 10% of our downtown workforce, or at least within the CID, over to transit. That will then free up a couple thousand spaces and allow for more office space to get leased.
Are you demanding, or is the city really putting in this part of their proposals that they include parking to meet the needs, maybe exceed the needs of every building that goes up?
No. When the Downtown Commission formed in the late 90s and developed a new zoning code, they actually got rid of the parking requirement downtown. They felt that it was up to the developer to determine how much parking they needed in order to make their project work in the market.
And how's that working out?
I would say generally it's been very good because in the case of a lot of housing projects, the parking, adding structured parking, is really a drain on their profit, and it actually ends up making the cost of the housing go much higher. Now, some of the office buildings that were relying on these surface lots, they're starting to grumble.
Who's living in these buildings? We talked about this a little earlier in the show. I said I see mostly millennials, but you know, I'm also seeing now friends who are near retirement age, empty nesters, that are looking to this, Jim.
Well, it's those two groups. It's millennials peppered with a bit of empty nesters. Mark, you may have seen some data on this, but I've had developers estimate that about 70% of the renters downtown, at least the new renters, are millennials. And then the rest are empty nesters, maybe with some single divorces thrown in there. What you don't see, of course, are kids. You see no families to speak of. Now, a few, but very few. This is what's driving not just downtown, but the apartment construction nationwide. A huge percentage of the household formation right now is coming from two groups without kids. Baby boomers who are retiring, they're empty nesters, they're selling their big home, and millennials. That is going to be the case for the next dozen years or so, which is one reason I agree with Mark. I don't think you're going to see a big drop-off in demand for downtown housing. The question to me becomes what happens when the millennials have kids. Everyone I've talked to has the same answer. They're going to hightail it out of downtown. That doesn't mean downtown is going to become a ghost town. They're going to be backfilled by another generation that is actually even bigger than millennials, right behind the millennials. There's plenty of demand for downtown apartments, but it's one reason I think you don't see a lot of condos for sale or being developed right now. The one big exception is Park's Edge in the Arena District, which caters to a very niche audience. So the short answer is it's young people with a few old people who don't have kids, who are probably going to leave, the younger ones, when they do have kids. But there's going to be plenty, plenty more right behind them.
Do any of you see folks backing away from owning either a condo or a home and just renting?
I think what you're seeing is that a lot of this is rental at the moment. And I do think when I compare the situation here in the U.S. broadly to, for example, what I've seen in Europe, is that there is a set of cultural expectations associated with homeownership that maybe aren't quite as strong in Europe. And you can see a potential shift there as well, right? There are many, many people in Germany, in the Netherlands, who rent for their entire lives, not because they can't buy, but simply because they choose not to. So is that a cultural shift that we might see here in the United States as well? I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball. But it's not unimaginable that even the exodus that Jim anticipates in 10 years when the millennials start having kids, I would say most of my friends in the Netherlands are raising kids in 2 or 3 bedroom apartments in downtown Amsterdam. I've seen the same in Boston as well, where people are choosing to raise children in relatively compact apartments in a much more walkable urban environment. Is that going to happen in central Ohio? I don't know. But it's not, at least for me, unimaginable because I've seen it happen in other places.
What do you all think are the downtown's biggest attractions to people? What do we have going for us downtown that won't bring people down there? Is it the arts? Is it walkability? What is it?
It's all of the above, and it just depends on the person. The arts have always been a really strong anchor within downtown Columbus, and they continue to be a big draw. The walkability, the ability to have random connections with people you know and people you don't know, people you bump into on the street that, and you have a conversation you weren't expecting to run into them and catch up. The tremendous amount of open space, which is all within walking distance, the programming that happens in that open space, it's both passive and active. The list is endless.
Jim, what do you think are the attractions and or detractions?
Well, certainly the things Mark mentioned. I also think the city has done a tremendous job of improving its infrastructure, especially, of course, its green space. The Scioto Mile and Columbus Commons, I think, are huge draws and shouldn't be underestimated. The other thing is a lot of people work in the center city, and I think traffic, especially as someone who sat on 315 this morning for quite a while, is becoming more of an obstacle for people. They're anecdotally, they seem more aware of that and more desirous of avoiding it. I think that helps downtown. And I think also, and Matthijs mentioned this, there is sort of a buzz, especially among young people, to be sort of in the center of things. Now, the downtown of Columbus doesn't have the nightlife or the street life that the Short North, for example, does. But there's still that desire to be sort of in the center of activity.
We're going to take a call. This is Terry from Columbus. Terry, you're on the air. Your question or comment, please.
Hi. Very interesting discussion. I am frankly skeptical about the Twin Tower development in North Market. So my question to anybody on the panel who may know is, can they cite an example of such a development, a Twin Tower development, where the city market proved to be stronger after the development and that they've got good evidence that the market became stronger? I'm not interested in platitudes here. I'd prefer statistics about how the market became stronger, for example, the number of businesses that came into the market, the number of customers, et cetera. I will mention, by the way, that I've been going to the North Market for 25 years. I regard it as a city treasure, and I hope that it will stay as good as it has been.
Terry, thank you for your comment. And I know you're not the only one that feels that was one of those, I think, Mark and Jim, that you've got people on both sides who don't want that change from what has been a tourist attraction for years. Others were saying we've got to move on. Comments?
It's a great question, but I haven't done any research into that. My personal feeling about it has really been focused on what happens at the street level. I haven't seen a lot of specific renderings. It's mostly been far away shots. But what's really, I think, going to be really helpful for the market is what that outdoor plaza looks like and how people can interact with it. And is it really going to facilitate the open-air farmers market that the market does every weekend?
We might have to wait and see on that one, I suppose, what happens.
I do think there's a cautionary tale, and I don't have statistics, so I apologize. But there was a development of a market in Rotterdam, which included significant housing. Architecturally, I think it's universally beloved, but the market itself is really struggling. So despite the addition of significant housing, there was an open-air market prior to this. Then they built a new market hall with housing on top. It's really a fairly remarkable building, I find. But in terms of the basic economics of the market floor, the trade that actually is happening, it has, I think, in the minds of many folks in Rotterdam, really devolved into a tourist attraction rather than a community amenity. So I think there's a cautionary tale out there. Again, I know different country, different policy context, but I would encourage your caller to look up that example.
Here's an email from Diana. She said, "We recently returned from Vancouver and saw a new public school that was built in a section of downtown. Is there talk of building any elementary, middle, high school in downtown Columbus? I believe more families would love to live downtown if there were walkable, bikeable schools nearby to single-family residences." Now, am I right? There are some schools near or in downtown. Am I right?
Right. We do have one public school within downtown, the downtown high school. Which consolidated Columbus Public's vocational programs from throughout the entire county.
By Fulton?
Near 4th and Fulton. We have a couple private schools. One of them includes Cristo Rey, which is doing very well. We do have a lot of public elementary schools surrounding downtown, though, in the Short North and in German Village and to the east and west as well. While the schools are a big issue, one of the issues that we have seen with attracting families to downtown is structural, is they are generally looking for three-bedroom units, and virtually everything that's getting built is two-bedroom, one-bedroom, or studio.
So bigger than schools is just space in the apartments or condos.
Yeah.
And there are schools in the surrounding area. Do you see, Matisse, as that being a draw?
Yeah, I think one of the key characteristics of American real estate is the central importance of school quality, or the perception of school quality, frankly. So I think for demand to strengthen among families to stay or move to downtown, I think school quality is a key issue, both for better or worse, right? I think there are a lot of drawbacks associated with long-term structural inequality and segregation that is directly tied to, again, school quality and a perception of school quality.
We talked about parking. We've talked about transportation. What about that walkability part, that bikeable part? The city seems to have their handle on some of it. Do we see more of that coming as more people live downtown, more space so that it doesn't just become congested with vehicles?
Yeah, definitely. One of the things we're waiting on that's going to be a very long wait is the complete reconstruction of Interstate 70 and 71 on two ends of downtown. And as ODOT moves through that project, they're going to be consolidating entrance and exit ramps, which will change a lot of the traffic patterns. Once that happens, the city traffic engineers are going to feel more comfortable in doing road diets and more bike lanes in parts of downtown.
And one more question before we leave. Doug from Berwick, your question, please. You're on the air.
Hi, yeah, it's Doug from Berwick. And I love seeing all the development happening downtown. I'm wondering, I go to Hills Market, I go to the North Market. When will Kroger or Giant Eagle or some more affordable option for folks becoming? Any idea about that, Mark?
Thank you, Doug.
The developer of the Millennial Tower has said that he's trying to attract a grocery store. Whether that's a Kroger type or something more high-end, I can't say. But I think it's going to be dependent upon a project like that that's going to have a larger footprint than a lot of what we're seeing being developed right now.
I guess that's the next piece to watch, Jim.
I was going to say Grand Central also includes a proposal for a grocery store.
And there is a grocery store, but it's in the Brewery District. And mm-hmm. I understand there are a lot more restaurants going up downtown than retail. So that might be the next piece that we need to fit into things. Gentlemen, thank you. This has been an eye-opening discussion. And as I said, as we watch all the cranes go up downtown, we have a little bit more idea of what they're building. That's all the time we have for this hour. I would like to thank Housing Director for the Columbus Dispatch, Jim Weicker, Assistant Professor in the Knowlton School of Architecture at Ohio State University, Matthijs van Maskhorst, and Director of Research at Capital Crossroads and Discovery Special Improvements District, Mark Conti. Thank you all again for joining me in the studio.
Thanks.
Thank you.
This is All Size with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.